Hello, this is the True Speaks Network. I'm your host, Dylan, and we have a little change in schedule from what we had planned. Instead of Judas and his group joining me to discuss the reality of consciousness, I have Vince Eastwood here from Guerrilla Media, who's going to be discussing with me ways to cope with the fact that your life is and your world is not what you were led to believe. Vince, are you with us?
Yeah, well, in spirit anyway.
So I want to get right to it. The world around us is not what we want it to be. Vince, pause your stream. It's doing feedback.
Well, hold on. Is there a feedback in the background there or something?
Yeah, there's feedback.
Joining me. Okay, I can hear that. That's not good.
Vince Eastwood here. Okay. Media.
What you're going to have to do is just you turn the slider down from the broadcast.
Okay.
All right. So that you're getting no volume off of your browser. So if you've got a YouTube thing playing there, right?
It was my fault. I had it playing without realizing it. I thought it was your end that was recording it.
All right. Well, in that case, no worries. Let's restate the question and begin again, like Michael Finnegan.
So the world around us is really screwed up, as most of us who are awake understand. But what people struggle with the most is dealing with it. I struggled with it at first, but it's usually when you first wake up. So how do you deal with it?
Well, you know, it becomes a constant struggle. And because this is my profession, to expose scumbaggery and talk about truth, etc., I think the burden's a lot worse than most people. Not to belittle everybody's individual struggle, it's not easy. I think it's kind of like you start off, you think the world is one way, and then you find out nearly everything is the opposite. Oh, I can trust cops, can't I? Nah, bro, you can't. But I told the truth to this cop over here, and he then arrested me and charged me because he didn't have to gather any evidence or anything like that. And it turns out I wasn't even guilty of the crime that he charged me with. Well, what is going on here? And you go, bro, that's because the cops are a gang, all right? They're a criminal gang. What, really? Really? The cops are a criminal gang? I thought they were the kind of people who stood up to the criminal gangs. No. You got that the other way around. It's often the criminal gangs that are trying to stand up to the cops.
Well, there I'm going to have to slightly disagree with you, Vince. Not all of them are like that.
No. I'm talking about generalizations. Like, people think the cops are good in general. I'm saying that, no, there's some good cops. Sure, just like there's some good gangsters. You know, this whole world is more or less the opposite of what we've been brought up to believe, and it's kind of like a survival mechanism. And it's and what I say in private or what I say on radio or anything like that is kind of different to how I react to cops in the street, for example. Because right here, I'm not afraid to criticize them. When you're right in front of them, they will hurt you if you criticize them. Do you understand? That's the difference. So when you're in front of them, and I've been in front of numerous cops, I've been pushed around for no reason. When I was 19, I think, I got busted for selling a bit of weed in university, as a lot of kids do. And I was going to go to jail for up to 8 years for having 13 grams of it. It's less than half an ounce. About a third of one, actually. And they told me, if you tell us the truth, we'll go easy on you. So I said, all right, I've been a drug dealer and I've been dealing for about 8 months or something of that nature. And so they naturally said, okay, thank you very much for your confession. We're going to charge you with selling $40,000 worth of weed. What? You know, it's like, even if you confess to a crime, they still make up evidence. And this is not an isolated case, right?
Oh, I know.
It's prolific. I interviewed a New Zealand police prosecuting sergeant, Mrs. Grace Hayden, and she'd been a prosecuting sergeant for 15 years, mate. You know, had kind of like a record of putting people away, been damn good at her job. She becomes a private investigator. And I interviewed her. I asked her about the cops, the New Zealand police, right, and what her opinion was of them. She said the New Zealand police are so corrupt that you either will be corrupted by them or you will leave. And I left. And this is kind of what's happening in a very general kind of way across the entirety of society. Oh. There's this inherent corruption in our institutions. It's not your fault that you're born into a slave camp that turns you into a slave camp guard after making you forget that you're a slave in the first place. It's not your fault. And if you can't see the comedy of it, if you can't see the light through the darkness, then you're not coping with it that well. You know? This world is not all sunshine and rainbows. It's not all all fluffy video games and wonderful movies and trips to the mall. No. This world's actually quite real, and it's quite dark. And we avoid that kind of stuff most of the time for a good reason, because it's painful. It's traumatic to not ignore reality. There's actually parts of our brain that work specifically to ignore reality for us so that we don't get affected by it in the moment. Let's say you've been sent to Iraq or something, and you were beaten as a child, and you're really, really feeling sad about that, and you're suddenly under attack, and you've got bullets flying past you and tracer rounds, and all you can think about, strangely enough, is you getting beaten as a child and how traumatic it was, and instead of fighting back and saving your life, you get killed because you're too busy crying. There's a part of our brain that reacts and stops that from happening in those moments. Unfortunately, that can also cause a lot of tension, because if you have a lot of unresolved issues that you never look at and never eventually resolve, then they continue to get worse, you know, like a cancer. And incidentally, stress and unresolved issues have been linked to cancer.
There are a lot of things that are linked to cancer, the same as chemtrails and GMOs and fluoride.
Oh, yeah. And it's like there's a who was it? On the weekend, I filmed two big conferences. One was the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine launch, and they had four doctors speaking about certain stuff. Maybe a couple of them weren't doctors, but about alternative health therapies, etc. One was a Dr. Sam Shea, whose father was basically the top dog in the Philadelphia medical scene, you know, like top dog. And he died from a procedure that should have been, you know, quite open and shut case, very simple. And what this guy has discovered is the 10-point kind of wellness pyramid, right? There's all these sorts of habits, inputs, lifestyle choices, and things of this nature, which actually comprise 10 different categories of your life, and each of them have split into like these aspects, you know, like little symptoms and things like that. For example, sleep. Do you get to bed early? Do you get to bed late, you know? This mm-hmm. is the kind of thing that we're talking about, is sort of like a holistic health spectrum. And it was quite revolutionary to see somebody actually have it all down on paper and just think, oh my God, no wonder all these health nuts who focus on this area of their life look so sickly. Because they're ignoring 70% of the other stuff in your life that you're supposed to be taking care of. You know? There's a very real need for nutrition. There's a very real need for love, for sleep, a need to avoid toxins and EMF radiation. And what's deeply problematic is these things that we don't need, and these things that our body doesn't want are things that the authorities are telling us are good for us in a lot of ways, and or telling us are benign and totally non-threatening. And so we're getting progressively taken over by all of it, and it is saturating our lives. No wonder everybody's starting to get sick. No wonder the pharmaceutical industry is the most profitable industry in the world.
Well, I actually, it's the first time I've ever learned anything in school, was watching a documentary today in school about the food industry, and specifically Monsanto and their links to all these different health problems in the world. And we find out that the FDA and other health organizations around the world protect Monsanto and other food giants like Tyson. And it just makes you wonder, not me, but the or you, really, but the people who are just now understanding this for the first time, why would they tell us that this is bad for us but then protect it?
Well, it's a doublespeak. I don't know if you've ever heard of, what was his name? 1984?
I love that book. George Orwell.
Yeah, see, there you go, George Orwell. I was going to say Orson Welles, and I was like, no, that's not right. That's Citizen, no, that's Citizen Kane.
No, Orson Welles is talented too, though.
If you say so. Now, we're talking about 1984, doublespeak, okay? So there has to be a war that nobody sees all the time, and you have to have it reported to you, okay? Everything that you hear has to be the direct opposite of the truth, and if they do tell you the truth, then they have to tell you that it's good, all right? If it's a bad thing, that it's good, and if it's a good thing, that it's bad. So every truth is packaged with a lie, and every lie is packaged with the truth. So that way, you don't know that there's a difference. And if you don't know that there's a difference between a lie and the truth, it makes you really easy to control, because you're so easy to deceive. If people believe everything you tell them, imagine how easy your life would be, Dylan, if everybody took you absolutely at your word and you didn't have to justify nothing ever with evidence or backing it up.
I would have a lot less issues with people understanding the truth.
Well, think bigger. Have you ever seen the movie The Invention of Lying?
I have not, but...
I'll quickly explain this then. It's a world where no such thing as lying exists. Nobody's, you know, polite to each other and, you know, says little white lies and tries to make things not bad. Everybody's actually quite harsh to one another. Right?
That seems like modern day, but it's not because people don't lie. It's because people don't care.
Yeah, people don't care about the shockingness of the truth. And when you're watching this film, it's quite shocking because everybody's just blatantly honest about it. And this guy, he just has this really weird tick in his brain all of a sudden when he needs $700 out of his account, but he's only got $200. But he says he needs $700. And the lady at the bank teller looks up his account and goes, "I'm sorry, there's only $200 in here. It must be a problem with our system. Here, I'll get you $700." And he's just sitting there going, "Nobody knows that I'm lying. I just invented the first lie ever. And I'm being given money. Even when there's clear evidence right in front of the bank teller that I don't have that money." Now, does this seem a little bit like a parody of reality to you and the Federal Reserve System and Barack H. O'Berry?
It seems like a great parody. Can you send me a link to it? I'll be watching that tonight.
Oh, yeah, bro. You should totally illegally download it.
Nah. when did the movie come out?
Oh, years and years ago, man.
I'm going to have to look.
The Invention of Lying. You know, if anybody else wants a good laugh.
Or...
Yeah. It's got that Ricky Gervais guy. I don't know if you're familiar with his work. He's a quite funny comedian from the UK. And in The Office and all of that kind of stuff. And made him famous. All right. But anyway, what the point really was about all of this is there's quite a bunch of simple scams that are being run on the entirety of the population, okay, on a constant basis. And as you learn more and more about these scams, you start to see them everywhere, okay? And because you're seeing people being scammed all the time, if you have a conscience, if you're a real human being, you won't feel good about it. You'll probably feel angry about it. You might feel depressed about it after you get angry, and then after it, you learn to accept it. And then after that, you might actually start thinking about doing something about it. Some people jump the gun, and they rush into doing something about it while they're depressed or while they're angry. And they get surprised at just how much they get done, and then they learn to accept it. It works both ways.
That's honestly pretty – that's pretty funny. I don't remember going through the cycle myself, but I'm sure I did. I've only been awake for a year, so.
Yeah. Well, see, it's kind of like levels of awakening. It's sort of like Freemasonry. You know, you come in and you're like, oh, I'm part of a club now. And you're like, okay, your first degree. Well, how many degrees are there? Well, there's 33. And there's only 99 33-degree Freemasons in the entire freaking world, son. And you go, okay. So you're saying that the vast majority of people who get brought into this club of enlightenment, so to speak, of Freemasonry, the vast majority will never actually reach the peak of this club's publicly noted enlightenment? Yeah, that's right. Most of you will never know what it's really about until you reach that top degree. And only a few of you will. And you will also be forbidden from telling other people about it. Because even if you do tell other people about it, they won't understand what you're talking about.
That's the hardest thing to accept.
I don't know. Well, I what is acceptance? Could you define the word for me? I mean, as it means for you.
For me, acceptance is being able to sit back, look at your situation, and think to yourself, I don't like this, but it's reality.
Okay. What you're talking about is not acceptance. What you're talking about is giving up. Mm. What I'm talking about is opening up.
I never...
Allowing things to throw through. I'm not saying that this is exactly what you're talking about, but that's what it equates to me. Because the same thought has occurred to me, that that's actually part of what acceptance is accepting what you can't change. However, there's different levels to that. There are, in fact, a lot of things we can change about nearly everything. There's this cult now called the New Age cult, whose belief is that what you resist persists, which is coincidentally very similar to the Borg saying that resistance is futile. How did that happen, I wonder?
You know, I think that resistance is futile line is used in all the Doomsday movies now.
Yeah. And naturally, there's actually a whole bunch of things because what happens is you get this dichotomy. Now, we're talking about dealing with things and accepting things, right? So, first of all, I had to learn to accept that I'm an idiot in every single way that matters, that I'm uninformed, that I'm ignorant, that I'm full of hubris, and I'm impatient, and I'm flawed, deeply flawed. I had to accept all of these things about myself, and so should we all. Because it's only once you actually really start to accept the reality of that situation, this is what I'm talking about when I talk about acceptance, accepting your limitations. And then, once you've accepted them, you can learn to change them. Okay? It's kind of like sprint training. If you've ever seen this study that's been done, Dr. Mark J. Miller or something in Boston, he did a lot of study on the Boston Marathon, and he figured out that there's a reason that marathon runners versus sprinters look like frickin' cancer patients. It's because the release of cortisol constantly into the bloodstream when you're doing long-form exercise like jogging eats away muscle tissue. There's such a thing as a cortisol injection, but you can't do them ever in the same place because wherever you inject it kills that muscle group in order to harvest energy to send it round to the rest of the body. So as you're long-term jogging, it eats away every single muscle fiber you got. The sprinter, on the other hand, looks like a very strong, healthy person. And that's because when you're only running for 1 minute, this is how we used to do it way back in the day. You know, you see a tiger, a saber-toothed tiger coming at you, you run for your life. You don't. I mean, you ever see a deer stand around stretching, you know, before it runs away from you? No, it just bolts. Yep. It's the same thing we're all hardwired to do. And it produces huge amounts of human growth hormone when we sprint for just a minute and then stop. And it massively increases your bulk and your strength because the chances are next week that tiger's still going to be there. And you need to tune your body into it. And this is the same thing that's happening psychologically with people in this so-called truth movement. Is they're trying to get down a methodology by which they can keep up, but at the same time, by trying to constantly keep up, you know, using the jogging analogy, they're eating themselves away. Whereas this sprinting analogy, it's about bursts. One huge burst, and then just stop and rest for a second, and have a look at what you've done. Who am I? Am I still a scumbag? I think I am. I need to do some more good in the world. You know, that self analysis quite important part of being a truther, because over time, I think I've learned to make assumptions and suppositions instead of looking at the evidence. You know, like I walk through the door, my wife says to me, Vinny, there was a car bomb that was going to go off in New York City. And I say, oh, don't worry, baby, it's probably just the FBI. Now, it turns out it was the FBI, but I didn't look at any of the evidence, so I didn't actually really know. And what this leads to down the track is having arguments with longtime friends over nothing. Because you assume you know what they're up to when you really don't, because you're so used to operating on assumptions. So we wind up back in that freaking circle.
I often will say that the biggest enemy of us conspiracy theorists is us conspiracy theorists, because we think everything is a conspiracy, and that turns people off.
That's what some people say to me,
But, for example, the Santa Barbara...
Might want to close down your Skype, your Facebook browsers there as well.
I keep forgetting to turn off the chat sounds. But the Santa Barbara thing, I don't believe that was a conspiracy. I believe the evidence is there to support that it wasn't.
When you say the Santa Barbara thing, I don't know what you're talking about.
There was a shooting and stabbing in Santa Barbara about a month ago.
Okay.
Or about a month ago.
See, and when somebody says mass shooting, you know the first thing that occurs to me, regardless of not looking at the evidence at all?
Gladio?
No. Pharmaceutical drug reaction. Zoloft. Yeah, Prozac, etc.
Well, I won't deny that that's a possibility there, but
it's apparently the most central causation of most mass shootings, a lot of murders, and a rash of suicides across the United States. You know, which shouldn't be surprising, because when you actually pull the readouts, and nobody in America reads anymore, trust me. And by nobody, I mean the people who are still wannabe somebodies read, but the rest of them, no. Top reactions. Warning, side effects. Death. Homicide. Suicide. Homicide, then suicide. You know? Debilitating stomach cramps. Liver failure. Kidney failure. extreme bouts of depression, dizziness, seizures. You know, it's right there on the freaking. You go down to your doctor and you say, "Hey, can this have any side effects?" And he goes, "Oh, it might be a bit of weight loss, or it might be a bit of weight gain." You know, it's amazing. Because if he says weight loss and you kill yourself, technically he's right, because every human body loses, like, what, 21 grams after death? He wasn't lying to you. And this is what Monsanto's all about, man.
Oh, yeah.
And again, as I say, there's the same scams being played all the time. And because you see these scams being played all the time, it constantly reminds you that they're still going on and people still haven't realized what the hell is going on. And it makes you feel alone, right? And isolated. Your family don't listen to you. A lot of your friends who you used to relate to very, very well, and you may have even gotten on really well with your family, suddenly are not there. There's no support network for you. So when you're talking about Monsanto and the cycling door that they have between the FDA approval and Monsanto products, because they've got Monsanto executives on the FDA board all the time, they don't never have one, you know, then you start to wonder, am I going nuts? Am I becoming crazy? And in a lot of cases, it actually does drive you crazy. If somebody tells you that there's no such thing as a crazy conspiracy theorist, and that's a fraud, it's a lie, that person is delusional. There are crazy conspiracy theorists. There are people who believe all kinds of things that have zero evidence, zero basis for even wanting to believe in it in the first place, whose argumentative platform and the deep understanding of their knowledge consists of, if you don't believe it without checking on it, you're retarded. Right? You've got to watch out for that stuff. These are people who have lost their sense of humor generally. These are people who communicate to you in Facebook using all caps. All capital letters, all abuse, no information, nothing useful to contribute. If all you're
going to do is type in capital, that means you're just immature, not really nothing else but immaturity.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
I do like the all caps, you know, parts, you know, specifically. Like, I don't know if you've ever listened to the comedy of Lewis Black. It's a little adults only, so your parents might not allow you to watch it. What about Bill Hicks?
I have not, but my parents don't care what movies I watch.
Okay, well, that's fantastic parenting there, bro.
I know what I can and can't watch.
Okay.
I know what I should and shouldn't watch.
But do you listen to that, what you can and can't watch and what you should and shouldn't watch?
No.
Well, moral obligation, mate. Moral obligation. That's all I'll say. In fact, it doesn't even make sense in that context. Never mind. Where were we? We're talking about people who are communicating in all camps, all right, and how conspiracies drive you crazy. Okay, so it's sort of like there's an old saying, you can't put your head into the darkness and then bring it out again into the light without taking some of the darkness back with you. You're talking about things that have changed the world, things that run the world, things that nobody will believe you. Okay? Mm-hmm. What are psych wards full of? People mm-hmm. who are telling you stories that nobody believes, and they lock them up. Okay? Because they don't realize. Well, this is some of them. Some of them have.
Some people are genuinely crazy.
Yeah. But what drives some crazy people, generally crazy, into conspiracy theories and get driven even worse off the rails by them is
I'm a little confused. Are you calling conspiracy theorists crazy?
hey, aren't we all crazy in a little bit of way? I'm talking about specifically the crazy conspiracy theorists. There's a section of conspiracy theorists. Some are incredibly reasonable, doctors, lawyers, heads of state, etc., who talk about conspiracies and in a very open and genuine fashion. I call them conspiracy theorists in a positive way. Because a conspiracy theorist, in my definition of the word, is a person who believes, absolutely believes, and you cannot convince them otherwise, that there's a group of ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery in control of the world. All right? And that things happen for a reason. There's such a thing as collusion and lies and deception. And there's always something deeper to the story. And on the other side of the spectrum, a coincidence theorist is somebody who believes everything happens by sheer coincidence. No such thing as backroom deals, no such thing as history, context, reason. You know, that's the kind of spectrum I'm talking about. However,
I don't believe there are any coincidences in the world.
Well, there's the thing. Synchronicity, do you believe in that? Meaningful coincidence?
Can you elaborate more on meaningful coincidence?
Well,
because I don't.
Let me give you two stories then. I was sitting at my desk. I just finished a show. I hadn't had breakfast, and I was really, really hungry, and I felt like a meat pie. All of a sudden, it's my mate Dan at the door, and he goes, "Vinny, I bought you meat pie." The other day, this was a year or so ago, I got up in the morning, and when you have to pay bills and things like that, it's often the thing you think about in the morning. You get up on bill day, and you're like, oh my God, where do I pay? I've got to pay this, the internet, the fuel, and the rent, and power, and all of that kind of stuff. And bro, it's like $500. I don't have $500. Go to my computer, check my PayPal donations. There's exactly $500 in there from one listener donated while I was asleep, thinking about it.
Hmm. Well, you know,
these are the kind of things, and those are just two examples that I remember quite vividly. It actually happens all the time for me, and it's starting to get a lot more intense recently, where I can, I'll be humming a tune. Then all of a sudden that tune comes on the radio. Or I'll be thinking about a remake of a movie that I'd really love to see, and then it gets announced a month or so later that there's going to be a remake of this movie launched, you know? I'm starting to have these really strange, interesting connections and coincidences happen all around me. And I think it comes down to interpretation. You know, what does it mean? What does it mean that I'm getting into my car, singing in my head Electric Avenue, and then turn on the radio and the song Electric Avenue starts right away on a completely random channel? What does that mean? Is there any practical benefit to it? Well, of course there's no freaking practical benefit. And whatever it means is... Okay.
Sorry, I want to clarify my belief on it. I believe that in a string of events, I'm going to go with a recently. Hope I can find it, but I'm going to go to 9/11 for this one. There was a possibly controlled demolition. Agreed?
Yeah. I was just thinking about this last night, synchronistically.
Another coincidence, I guess. 2 weeks before, all the bomb-sniffing dogs were removed. 1 week before, anyone who wanted... There were people going in and out of the building, construction crews.
White jumpsuits, no name tags, huge cables dragged all over the place, and they said, oh, we're doing an internet upgrade.
And then the day of, people were told to stay home from world from Building 7 for unknown reasons. People were just told to stay home.
Yeah, the same thing happened in Oklahoma City.
I don't believe that all those things lined up like that are coincidences. I think that when you have a string of events like that, it has the possibility of being a coincidence, but a much less likely outlook on being a coincidence.
I agree. And what was the other thing I was talking about? It's when things go out of standard operating procedure that you have a conspiracy, okay? Nearly every single bombing that's happened on U.S. soil and whatnot, the authorities didn't act on standard operating procedure. Why every single one of them? You know, why couldn't it just be like one where they dropped the ball, or two, or three? But no, it's every single one. And if you see that lining up every single time, that every single investigation gets botched deliberately, every single time that there's a bomb about to go off, there's certain people who know about it beforehand and are told to stay away. Why is there always a lone gunman or a crazy terrorist with three names, you know, like Lee Harvey Oswald? A lot of these people.
John Wilkes Booth.
Yeah. It's strange, isn't it? And basically, because people's curiosity has been destroyed systematically over time, they not only don't hear about that information at all, even if they did, they don't even think about it. It's just like, oh, that's interesting. You know, there's no further thought process, you know. Do you have any questions about this? No. I've just told you that your government are colluding to kill you and your fellow citizens as a pretext for then enslaving and then killing you and your fellow citizens over again. I'm telling you that they're currently printing your currency out of frickin' thin air and making you pay for it with the sweat off your brow, which you can't do, so that you'll be perpetually in debt, so that you become a slave and then killed. Okay? I'm not making it up. There's documents, there's people admitting it from the elite and everything all over the place. Okay.
Go to the bills.
So there you are, reciting all these facts and figures, but are you an authority figure?
No.
Are you a doctor? Are you a lawyer? Are you somebody who's a scientist or something of that nature? Because people have got this thing ingrained into them called the appeal to authority logical fallacy. If somebody's in a position of authority, they must be correct. Right? That's the assumption. And it's totally stupid. The people in positions of authority often have intelligence and are capable of figuring stuff out. But they're not right all the time. How could they be? And you only think about that for just 2 seconds. If all the people that were in power and control were really, really intelligent and totally onto it, and there was nothing for us to worry about, would the state of the world be anything like it is now? If they knew what the hell they were doing, or were doing it for good, benevolent purposes?
If people understood what was going on in the world?
If the people in power and control actually understood how the world was, were actually intelligent, and running it with morality and caring for their fellow man as their fuel, rather than scumbaggery and wealth.
I believe, and this is my personal belief, that these people in power that are doing this are megalomaniacs. They have convinced themselves that what they're doing is good.
The word is megalomaniac. A megalomaniac was Joseph Mengele from World War II, who was the one who experimented on Jews and whatnot in the death camps.
Okay. Sorry, I mispronounced the name. That's my bad. But
it matters not.
But I believe that they think that what they're doing is good, and that they are doing things for benevolent reasons, when in reality they are not. When in reality they're hurting people. I believe they've made themselves think that.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you only need to make yourself think that if you have a conscience. I don't believe many of them do.
I don't believe many of them do either, but people who started off good...
Here's the problem. It's a, what's it called? A psychological disorder called psychopathy. Psychopaths, right?
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that all the aspects and the personality traits of psychopaths dictate the lust for two things and the fear of two things. The things that they crave are power and control, and the things that they fear are being exposed and worse, psychopaths, because psychopaths don't play by rules. I mean...
Well, they have no rules.
Yeah, they have no rules. They literally make it up as they go along. They feel... I saw a great thing from the Smithsonian. Here's the emotional attachment. Like, let's say, Dylan, put yourself in the shoes for a moment. Let's say you're walking down the street, you know, like a runny nose or something like that, and you blew your nose on a Kleenex and you threw it in the bin, okay, and you keep walking. On the way to school, or maybe at the end of the school day, do you think about that Kleenex? Do you think what its life could have been like if you didn't blow snot all over it and chuck it in a bin? Do you wonder whether or not it actually had feelings or if it had relationships with the other tissues in the box? Of course you don't.
Do you?
No.
Okay. Could have.
However, imagine that Kleenex was a human being, really was a human being, and you just killed them and dumped them in a dumpster. If you were a psychopath, you would have the exact same reaction that you and I would to that Kleenex tissue. Okay? They treat us as objects, prey, and we're nothing to them. They have no remorse of any kind. They can kill a child horribly and think it's funny. Get away with it. Currently, 400,000 children a year go missing in the United States. Just totally missing. Never seen again. 400,000 a year. In the United Kingdom, there's 100,000 children go missing every year. Now, this is the... This branches on the topic that, in my opinion, is the most traumatic topic of all the truth movement. Right? You can't outdo this one. The child kidnapping and pedophile industry, which is probably one of the most reaching. It's you see the setup of the apparatus everywhere. Most people don't like to talk about it. In fact, I've been trying to not to talk about it myself recently. However, there's hundreds of thousands of kids going missing and being tortured and raped as we speak. Everywhere. And apparently the UN's involved. Large US corporations like DynCorp and things of that nature.
I'm not sure that... this theory I haven't seen as much evidence for. And...
Have you looked into CPS?
This is something that I'm relatively new to.
Trust me, Dylan, if I might say so, don't go into this subject, right? Take my word for it, man. You don't want to know. You don't want to know. I thought I wanted to know, and I discovered different. I actually don't want to know. It's a lot of the people who put their head into this topic, who are actually involved, you know, helping the victims and things of that nature, they need counseling, predominantly. They're damaged. Looking into this stuff does damage you, and this is why I avoid talking about it, because I can traumatize people greatly by just telling them what I know, who I've interviewed, what they've told me, the evidence and the recordings that they've shown me, the things that have happened to them and their children. You know, trust me, you don't want to know.
I want to know, but I do know that if what you're saying is true about it, from what you've said already, then there needs to be someone willing to stop it.
There does. However, everybody who seems to step up and try to stop it also goes missing or suffers psychotic breaks. because it's so harsh, the thing that they're dealing with them, predominantly because nobody wants to believe it. So if you're trying to help people who are being tortured and raped and things like that by bloodthirsty pedophiles that have billions of dollars in their bank accounts and whatnot and can do as many as 6 boys a night and bury them in their backwoods with no troubles, not even thinking about it, and you know that this is going on and you've witnessed it going on and you've actually recorded it, and then you've seen that when you go to expose it, you go to the cop, and the cop suddenly tries to avoid the investigation. He tries to misdirect you elsewhere. He's on the take. And then you're like, okay, well, what about the nurses who treated these children? And go to the nurses and the doctors and things like that, and they say, oh, no, there's nothing to worry about. Oh, my God, they're on the take too. And then you go to the local sheriff, you know, surely, you know, they might have infiltrated the local police department, but surely not the sheriff's office. And he voids your investigation, and he tells you that there's nothing absolutely going on. Frack, he's on the take too. Unbelievable. Everybody who you'd go to in a position of authority to help you expose this, the person who it usually gets directed to is on the take. And if they're not on the take already, when they start investigating, it then goes up to the higher levels, and the higher level says, stop that investigation right now. There's nothing to it. This person's crazy, etc. Lock them up into a mental institution. That's what happens to these people, man. Most of them get locked up in mental institutions. It only takes 2 signatures, and the people don't even need to know you. At least this is the way it works in New Zealand. There's similar apparatus that goes up on the States, and you can just be popped in there. And then they'll dope you up forcibly. They'll strap you to a chair, and they'll pump you full of experimental medications. And by experimental, I mean they've been approved by the FDA for public consumption, which means they've been through no trials, no double-blind trials, no placebo tests.
Which means they're probably dangerous.
Yeah, which means they're probably dangerous. And will probably frack up your head and turn you into a crazy person. You see? If the conspiracy themselves don't drive you crazy, they will strap you to a chair and force drugs down you that will make you crazy. You know, that's the kind of thing that happens with this sphere of influence and research. When you want to really do serious stuff and you really want to clean up the scum in the society, you get what you pay for.
It's not anything I really feel like looking into, because I don't really feel like being traumatized.
Yeah, see. See, I didn't start hearing about this until I was like 26, 27. And even at that point, it was like, boom. This lady came around to my place like a couple of months ago, bro. This is actually a good story. This is a good thing to illustrate. I'd been in talk radio for 3 years, listening to people's traumas from all over the place. And this one woman comes around to my place for 6 hours, doesn't stop talking for the entire 6 hours. Because I'm the first person she's talked to in a long time that would actually listen to her and not think she was crazy, because I unfortunately knew that what she was telling me was the truth. Yeah. You try taking on 6 hours of rape stories and things like that. It is massively devastating to listen to, bro. I couldn't edit a show. I edit freaking a show a day minimum, doing so for 3 years. I couldn't edit a show for a full 2 months because of that day. Only that one day. It was as if my life and soul had been sucked out of me. That's how painful this topic is. So let's move right along and talk about something a little bit more positive, shall we? In terms of keeping your sanity, it's imperative that you keep your sense of humor about things, okay? There's a great scene in a TV series, Scrubs, where he says, what was it? You see the doctor in there? He's going to tell that family that their loved one died and that there was some kind of complication. And then he's going to go back to work. Do you think anybody else in that room is going to go back to work today? You see? That's why we make jokes, to distance ourselves. That's why we tell jokes, so we can just get by, not because it's fun. Well, sometimes because it's fun.
Well, sometimes you gotta laugh at the pure irony.
Yeah, you know. I mean, that's what nanothermite's all about, laughing at the pure irony. Because you get it? Nanothermite creates iron ore spheres.
That was a bad joke, but it's still good to laugh at.
Hey, see, you know, there's bad jokes everywhere. What was it? Dick Cheney, he celebrates 9/11 every year, bro. He gets a big cardboard cutout kind of the Twin Towers set up in the living room of his cottage, you know. And he gets his family round, he gets some presents and everything. They drape Christmas lights and fairy lights and artificial explosive damage and things of that nature, little plastic decorations all over the tower, you know. And one year the tower caught fire, and it burned for 4 hours, but it didn't collapse.
I saw that story. The part that people get stuck at when talking, I've convinced 3 or 4 people. Shoot, I lost my train of thought.
Trying to convince people that 9/11 is an inside job?
I convinced people that the buildings couldn't fall alone. They had to be aided. The problem people have is when I tell them who helped bring them down.
Yeah. It was Bush. It was all Bush. No. There's actually three people had the authority on that day to make that day happen. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, President George W. Bush, and Vice President Dick Cheney. The only three people with the clearance. They're the only people that it could have called on the war game, the big NORAD war game that they were doing at the time. They could have called it off if they wanted. They didn't. They're the ones who didn't scramble who could have had the authority to not scramble the jet fighters to intercept and maybe send them in the opposite direction to the actual hijackings. There's all sorts of high-level interference if you look into the 9/11 story, folks. So, here's a question. What do you hope to gain from it? What do you hope to gain from it, really? And unfortunately, the answer is the people perpetrating the crime don't actually stand to gain a whole lot. Here's the question.
That's where I think you're actually wrong on that.
Well, can I finish?
I apologize.
The ultimate question is, what would they stand to lose if they didn't do what they were told?
Can I counter a point that you were making about they wouldn't have much to gain?
And by I'm not saying that they had nothing to gain. I'm saying it's not a whole lot when you compare it to they would lose their lives if they didn't do it. That was the point I was trying to make.
But, okay.
Yeah. There's plenty they can gain. I mean, Bush now has a giant ranch in South America or something like that. All the elite are getting the hell out of the States. You know, there's a reason for that. It's because they're imploding the country. You know, they're sucking it out, you know, like a Hoover. You know,
to get out of here too if I had the capability.
You know what? I've found something is interesting. We were talking about synchronicity before. I've talked to a number of people just this last week, bro, like coincidentally, who have traveled all around the world with nothing. Like literally, just decided, oh, I'm going here. And then all of a sudden, all this stuff comes up. These people turn up, they stick their thumb out, and they happen to be going in the same direction or whatever. Turns out whatever you really want to do, if you're actually really totally committed to it and you really don't have much of a choice, somehow the universe just goes, I might as well get out of his way. So if you really want to leave the States, man, you know, go Mexico way. Or actually, Canada would be closer to you, wouldn't it?
Yes, Canada would be closer.
Okay. Unfortunately,
Canada is actually one of the... Canada and Australia are two places I want to visit, but Australia wouldn't take me.
Australia wouldn't take you.
No, I have a physical... I'm wheelchair-bound.
Oh, okay.
I can't move my arms or legs.
Holy cow, man. I had no idea. How long for since birth?
Since birth. I haven't been able to move since birth.
Well, that's unfortunate.
It is what it is. Got to make the best out of it.
Yeah. Well, see, you know, I can still move my arms and legs, and I'm talking about, like, trauma and pain and suffering and all of that kind of stuff. And this comes to another important realization about how I know nothing of pain and suffering. I know nothing of inconvenience, you know? But it's usually by comparison. It's kind of like when people see, what's it called? They see starving children in Africa on the television, and then they turn off the television to make the starving children go away. Doesn't work very well, does it?
Mm-mm.
You know? Because when you close your eyes, can you move your arms and legs?
In my dreams, yes.
You can do it in your dreams?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a joyous occasion, or is it a regretful one, a lamenting one?
I don't remember.
It's sad when you wake up kind of thing, but you don't really remember.
I don't see it as a bad or good thing, honestly. I see that there's a lot of advantages to my physical limits. There are a lot of advantages. But there are limitations. People look at me differently. I don't see that as a good or bad thing. But I can't go out and protest like I'd want to. Mm. I'd want to be out there doing something. But I also see it as a good thing because I don't really know if I'd be as smart as I was if I could go out and see the world like most other people.
Because you wouldn't be stuck at home, basically forced to absorb knowledge.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think that's something that happened to me, like, after I had a couple of jobs go south on me. You know, like, I was really, really good at my job, selling stuff to people, right? And the bosses were just scumbags, more or less. They didn't care about me. They didn't care about the customer. They didn't care about anything. They didn't care about anything but themselves.
And that's business.
Yeah. No, that's psychopathy. Psychopaths cluster in business, media, politics, law, religion, and medicine. Those are the main control structures of society, yes?
See, I use a... I'm religious. I use it as a way to explain how I've lived through three near-death experiences.
Mm.
And one that continues today.
Now, do you believe in the power of Jesus Christ? Because I do. And But why do I believe in the power of Jesus Christ? Well, because the alternative is somebody telling me that there's a consequence? No, that's not the reason. There's a good reason for it. It's because when I'm down in the dumps, really, really down in the dumps, and I know that there's nothing there to help me or to save me, I call out the name and it makes me feel better. It really does. I actually feel physically better. And it's happened to me ever since I was got busted for weed way back in the day, and my legs gave out of me trying to get up the stairs to go home because I couldn't physically do it. I had that much freaking emotional pain and energy and fear of my future and my anxiety. I had to call out to Jesus in order to put the strength back in my legs just to get me up the freaking staircase to go home and go to sleep.
When you had said that psychopaths go into religion, I had figured you were an atheist.
No. There's one thing you've got to remember. Religion and spirituality are mutually exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
All right? It might sound strange to you. It might maybe even anger you or produce an emotional reaction. But you don't need a book to be in touch with God. You don't need a church. You need nothing. You have belief. Belief and faith are the two things that keep you close to your higher self. Now, my higher self, for example, my idea of God and higher self are very different to everybody else. I think so anyway. My higher self sort of looks like me, except way better, and sort of thinks like me, except he's way smarter. sort of feels emotions like me and sees things a little bit before they happen, but way better. Like, he's kind of like a super me. In every way that I am, he's taken all the flaws and totally make them perfected, right? This is what you call your higher self. And the whole point, in my opinion, of having a higher self, or at least for me anyway, is to have a pinnacle that I cannot achieve in life.
Okay? To have a goal that you can never get towards, but something to always strive towards.
Exactly. And this means that you need perpetual faith in order to keep that belief running. That belief in yourself or belief in God, it actually really doesn't matter how you interpret it, because I found that simply that basic belief and faith in and of itself is what literally saves people's lives. To illustrate the point, I want to talk about Vietnam veterans in the POW camps, prisoner of war camps in the 70s and late 60s. Some men had been in these camps for years and years at a time. And what they found, interestingly enough, is that every atheist died in captivity, and very few of the ones who had strong belief in Jesus or other religions died. All right? Because when an atheist is locked alone in that cell with no hope of rescue, he's alone in that cell with no hope of rescue. If you believe, you're never alone, and you're never without hope.
It's a fact that those who believe that there's something out there waiting for you or after you die, or believe that there's someone that is always trying to make your life better, they live longer because they have more hope.
Now, if you want to keep talking about that for a moment, I've got to go take a quick WikiLeak, and I'll be right back.
Okay. So,
I mean, talk about your beliefs and with your condition, did that kind of spring from that? I mean, because I found with my beliefs, a lot of them came because I needed one at the time to save me from myself.
If anyone wants to hear about my near-death experiences in my life, then I'll talk about them, but typically people don't like to hear about others. Just type in the comment section if you want to know what led me to my beliefs, and if you don't, then I will figure something out to talk about, or maybe put a topic in the comment section, and when we get back, I can see if Vince wants to discuss it with me. So, if anyone is still listening, and this is going to be probably the worst part of the show right here, because I can't talk to myself for any length of time.
I'm back.
Thank you. Thank you, God.
Sorry, did you just wonder where I went for there for a moment?
I kind of, but I was sitting there not knowing what to talk about, because typically people don't like to hear about other people.
I don't think so. It depends whether or not those other people are interesting and are more interesting than themselves. Mm-hmm. They don't like to hear people talk about themselves, not when they're in a conversation with them. On radio, on the other hand, it's a completely different story, because the only reason you're there is to listen.
I gotcha.
Well, do you know what narcissism is?
Narcissism is this belief that you are the only thing that matters.
Sort of. Well, you know what psychopathy is? Not caring about other people and being totally full of yourself?
Right? Narcissism.
Not the same thing. All psychopaths are narcissists, but not all narcissists are psychopaths. Okay? You ever heard of Muhammad Ali?
I have.
I'm the best in the world. You will be looking up at me from the floor. All right? Is he full of crap, or is he just that good? He's just that good. All right? Is he bragging about himself? Sure he is. Does he have reason to brag? Sure he does. Narcissist. What you call a benign narcissist. Somebody who has many of the same traits and characteristics of a psychopathic narcissist, but none of the drawbacks in personality that would actually make them hurt other people or feel good about that. And in fact, Muhammad Ali went from being a heavyweight champion of the world, and he spent the rest of his time doing charity, you know, with all his money and everything. Doesn't sound terribly narcissistic, but actually that's what a narcissist generally does. And same with Bruce Lee. Helped a huge quantity of people understand deep amounts about training, spirituality, martial arts. Really gave the Asians in America actually something to look up for, something to strive for, because before Bruce Lee's time, when he was a boy and everything, Asians were seen as very second-class citizens because there was no real Asian heroes at all around at the time until Bruce Lee came along. And he changed everything. He made everything better for everybody. And that was his intention. He was a narcissist. You know? That's the thing, and I'm one too. And one of the things about narcissists is that we like to talk about ourselves. We like to hear the sound of our own voice. So naturally, I got into radio. And it's about having a real strong belief in yourself, but also having a deep, profound responsibility for the gifts and skills that you've got. You know, I've got the gift of the gab better than most people. I can edit videos and radio shows faster than 90% of the people in the industry, and I haven't had one day's training. It's because, just like Muhammad Ali, yes, I am that freaking good. However, it means that if you are really good at something and you have skills of that nature way better than other people, don't hold it over them. Help them. Okay?
Help them become as skilled.
You don't even necessarily have to help them become as skilled, because you can just help them to realize that I developed these skills and I used my talents. You find out what your talents are. You find out what your skills are, and you will develop them. And it's just that simple. Not everybody will be able to do what I can do. However, there are people who need the things that I can do, like really need them. Activists, for example, who are exposing scumbaggery, very rarely will have a lot of airtime given to them by mainstream media. So I use my skills as a gift of the gab douchebag with a microphone, record a lovely interview with them. We have some fun. People get to know the real them, and they also get to know about the real issues. And I publish that and then give it out to everybody for free, and then ask people, if you support this way of doing things, then you can give me a gift of like $5 a month or anything. You don't have to pay. You get it all for free. Just if you want to see it continue, contribute. And hopefully, I'll be able to survive. And for the last couple of years, that's the methodology we've been running on. And it's been working. Now, the live stream on the YouTube seems to be down.
Really?
Yeah. Either that or it's on a really delayed broadcast. Did you have like a long silence at some point just before?
A video call ended because of a server error. Okay, let me check that. Shoot. Hold on, let me check.
How about this? We're recording on the Skype anyway, so I'll just keep continuing while you sort that out. I was wondering to myself the other day, exactly what is it that I want to achieve? You know, as a narcissist, as just an ordinary dude.
All right, I am joining the hangout, so we're about to restart.
Okay.
I apologize for the delay, and whatever happened, I still don't know. But we are back and we are live. Vince is still with us, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know where we were when the stream ended.
Okay. I don't know. But I think we'll go over the narcissist thing again, because I'm a narcissist and I like to talk about myself.
Therefore, you like to talk about narcissists.
Oh, yeah. It's actually quite rare for narcissists to talk about themselves as narcissists, because a lot of them are like, there's a stigmatization, basically. Kind of like if somebody says, oh, I'm autistic, or whatever, or I've got Asperger's. Like, my friend Mike, for example, he has Asperger's. I've known him for 2 years. I didn't notice anything different, you know? It's like somebody labels you with something and they say that it's a bad thing. It's like, well, actually, some of the things...
Some people have a theory that these mental disorders are either fake in some ways or created by us.
It's the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, the DSM, which was started up by psychiatry, which is a lot of crack. You'd have to be smoking a lot of crack in order to think that it was real, more or less, because that's how they do all their studies. They're basically just sitting there high on drugs, messing with people, you know. I mean, for example, here's a real great scientific test to see whether or not somebody can be cured of their mental illness of believing in fairies. We're going to strap them to an electric chair and dunk them in ice-cold water periodically every single day for a year. Sound real scientific, right? Wait, doesn't it sound like torture? And doesn't it sound like the people who would do this to another human being sound like maniacs? Oh, wait.
Psychopaths.
And welcome to the psychiatric profession. This is how it began. And it now is continuing in much the same way, except instead of dunking people in cold water to torture them, you give them a drug that is a hell of a lot more effective. So that way, they can torture themselves, and all you have to do is remind them to do it several times a day. And you can sit back and feed off the pain while getting kickbacks from the pharmaceutical industry and then going to Tahiti on the weekend. Life could not be sweeter. I have noticed that there is a distinct lack of ability to make money if you're not screwing people over. All right? It's actually really quite difficult. If you're giving people a good deal, not sleight of hand or fraud, then you're going to struggle. Right?
Agreed. I can prove that. Well, I'm sure you can too, being a salesman.
Well, it's known as a self-evident truth, right? Something that nobody argues with because they've seen it and it's pretty obvious. Scumbags make all the money. The good people get left out in the cold to die and shiver, right? And even now, when a pastor or a priest or something of that nature goes to a freeway underpass to give food and water to the homeless people there, who used to have jobs, who used to have homes, who used to have families, who now live with their own family and kick them out because they couldn't afford to feed them or something like that. Those pastors and priests are now getting fined by the cities that they're doing this in because it's illegal to feed the homeless.
Yeah, that's a bit insane.
No, it's not insane. It's psychopathic. Psychopathy makes sense, but you have to be crazy in order for it to make sense, yeah? You have to be a psychopath. All right, so imagine for a moment that you're a ruthless criminal psychopath with more money than God, and you wanted to create a system by which the world would work. Don't you think the way the world works now is exactly what that system would look like?
Yes, entirely.
Mm-hmm. And that's because psychopaths control the world. It's not like one psychopath in the top center and he controls everything. It's that the system is hierarchical. Every system is hierarchical. Doesn't matter whether you're a politician or a journalist or a gas station attendant. There's a hierarchy. the fresh meat comes in, and then they get chopped away and chopped away and chopped away and chopped away until there's only a few left right at the very top. And I use the analogy of the stagnant pond. Where do you locate the scum in a stagnant pond? It's right at the top, isn't it? And what does scum do when it covers the entire surface of a pond? It chokes out all the light and nutrients of the sun to everything beneath them. And they wither and die. You see? Works, doesn't it? As an analogy. That's what these things try to do. And because I'm a narcissist, I know a hell of a lot about how these people think about themselves, because I think about myself much the same way that they do. Except I've got guilt. I've got remorse.
You've got a conscience.
I've got a conscience. I've got humor. I've got creativity. I have a lot of strengths that they do not. They would say that these things that I have are weaknesses. I would say that their lack of empathy, their lack of humor, their lack of creativity are their greatest weaknesses. Right? And it's kind of like a war between benign narcissists who are great leaders in most cases and really, really care about their people. Usually they get assassinated. But versus psychopaths who have no compulsion to help other people in any way, shape, or form, unless, of course, it's them getting the bulk of the help, you know. It's like, oh, we'll donate to this and everything. It'll be great. But how many people did you actually help after all of those donations? Well, all the tax-free foundations got a cut. Well, hold on a second. How many people do they help? Well, the people on their payroll. And how many people do they help? Well, basically nobody. Okay, so you just had like a 9-way filter feed of donation money where a whole bunch of people get to clip the ticket and nobody who you're saying you're collecting the money for actually receives any benefit from it? And you can live with yourself? Sure I can. You can sleep at night? Sure I can. How can you sleep at night? Well, because I'm a psychopath. I mean, when you go to sleep at night, you people with a conscience, you stay up and you think about things, things that maybe you regret, or things that you maybe wish to do better in the day, or things that you're dreaming about, or whatever. I don't. Mm.
Can I
heads out as soon as heads out as soon as the head hits the pillow? I'm talking as a psychopath, but anyway, go ahead.
Can I use that as my excuse? As that's why I'm not sleeping at night.
Sure, you know, you can use any excuse you want, bro. if you believe it, go for your life, son.
I don't sleep well at night. I have a sort of a sleeping disorder.
Okay. Well, I'll actually send you a link, and this will be a good thing, because that video I told you about the health thing I filmed on the weekend earlier on in the last segment by Dr. Sam Shea, he actually used to suffer from chronic insomnia himself, and he's just when you've been doing this a long time. You might find out, you might not, because most people who get into talk radio fail within the first month or so. You know, it's not an easy industry. It's probably one of the hardest jobs that people do. You know, you have to have the kind of right mindset. More or less, you just kind of have to be a bit of a know-it-all douchebag. I mean, you know, if you're a know-it-all douchebag, you'll make a really good radio show host. I mean, really.
Yeah. And I'm too nice.
No, but even nice people can still be a bit of a know-it-all douchebag, you know what I'm saying? You know, it just has to be part of your raft of personality traits. Like, I'm a nice guy, I'm a philanthropist, I'm a genius, and I'm a know-it-all douchebag. you see how that works? But this guy, yeah, he's suffering from a lot of insomnia, his presentation again with those 10 different aspects of health that you need to watch out for, like all the categories of health and your psychological well-being and your sleep and your food and your electromagnetic radiation exposure and everything, all this range of factors come in. And I was just, yeah, you have to study health, everybody does, for years and years and years, just like the medical doctors do, so that you know your own health as well or better than a doctor would. you know, because you still have to tell them where it hurts. If they knew your health better than you do, they'd be able to tell you where it hurts, wouldn't they? You know, I always thought that was kind of strange. It's like, I know more about your health than you do. Really, tell me where it hurts. You can't, can you? It's because you don't actually know. It's because you're not actually in this body. I am. I have to live here, you know.
And I don't even listen to my doctors anymore. They told me that I have no nerves in my heart, my lungs, or my intestines. And that I shouldn't be alive right now, but here I am. And they told me I was going to die 3 times, so I just stopped listening to them.
Yeah, I think that's an important life lesson, is that when a doctor says you're going to die...
It's because they're pretty much idiotic half the time.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like, if you accepted everything you listened to and you never really thought about it, you'd turn into a doctor, all right? Because you just regurgitate that stuff over and over and over again. Because if you've got high intelligence, high ability for memory, recall, and things of that nature, but no creativity and no ability to discern facts, and then you go into medical school, you know, you'll fly through. You won't have any problems. You won't be affected by the silo mentality that tries to push people to the outside who don't vibe with the exact same kind of bars. You know what I'm saying?
Kind of.
Well, it's kind of like you can tell a doctor something, and this isn't all. This is just some of them, the really, really brainwashed ones. You can tell them something as simple as having good nutrition will prevent disease. And they won't believe you, and they'll call you a quack. Okay? Now, incidentally, these are people who've taken the quote-unquote Hippocratic Oath, which is, of course, done by Hippocrates, who is, incidentally, a naturopath, nutritionist, chiropractor in ancient Greece. And who do... what do medical doctors all say is quackery? Chiropractic and naturopathy and nutrition? What don't they teach in major medical schools now that are all funded by Rockefeller drug companies and whatnot? Well, yeah, that's right. They don't teach nutrition. Why is that? You know? They don't...
I stopped listening to nutrition specialists.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, quote, unquote. They told me that I should go on a feeding tube because I can't eat. And 15 years later, I am told I eat too much.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's organic, a lot of organic growing methods and things of that nature. I mean, I'm not sure if you're capable of getting around in the garden and growing your own fruit and vegetables and things of that nature without the use of arms and legs. But I've known a lot of people personally, actually, who've had 3 months to live, 6 months to live, or saying we're going to have to cut out your everything from your throat down to your anus, basically. You're just going to have a straight tube. You're going to have no digestive system whatsoever. And they're just like, frack that. I'm not listening to these people who want to cut me up and use me for some kind of experiment.
If they're going to put me on a tube for the rest of my life, what's the point in living?
Exactly. So he gets out in the garden, and he's suffering, like, huge, huge pains all the time. And he's still out in this garden. He's still working at this stuff, and he's still eating the food. And then after a while, the pain starts to go away. Then it goes away completely. And he keeps eating the food and keeps eating the food. Not only does the pain go, but he starts to actually feel something he haven't felt in his entire life. At the age of 11, he felt happy. He felt rested, and the doctors would have killed him had he listened to them. And now he's a filmmaker, made a whole documentary about health called Real and Raw. It's produced by my former producer, the somewhat fabulous Mitch Santel. You know, it's amazing what happens when you stop listening to authority figures, isn't it? What you can achieve. Because all these rules and everything that they follow, they seek to do one thing, suppress creativity. All right? Now, they have to suppress your creativity and tell you that stuff isn't possible because they haven't got any left. All right? It destroyed theirs, and now they need to pass it on and destroy yours because they don't really have much of a choice in the matter. And that's kind of what I've found. is the real thing that you need to be looking for anybody that you trust or care about, or anybody that you hold as a close friend. Do they have creativity? You know, are they genuine? Are they just, you know, hamstring me and BS me one day? And it's really actually, as simple as that sounds like, it's actually quite difficult. Because specifically, psychopaths know what those people sound like to people. And are really good mimics. So you'll know a psychopath for 10 years. Think he'd be your best friend. And then all of a sudden, he destroys everything in your life. For no reason. Out of the blue, completely. You're like, what the hell? You know, that's what psychopaths are like, man. They're total infiltrators. In fact, it's funny. We're talking to Thomas Sheridan, wrote literally a book on it, Puzzling People, The Labyrinth of the Psychopath, I believe it was called. And he's got a new one out. I can't remember the title, but he and I and a number of other researchers are actually starting to really think about the psychopath equation. Because what's really problematic about it is that it's not a modern phenomenon. We've just given it a new name. We've given it the name psychopath, and we've called it a mental disorder. It used to be called demon possession. It used to be called jinn. It used to be called black magic. These kind of things. They used to be called archons, controllers. They used to be called snake demons. All of these things that mythologically are out there have been described, and interestingly enough, all have the exact same characteristics, the same behavioral patterns, the same obsessions, the same desires, and the same fears as psychopaths.
Well, the argument that people would use, and I like mythology, I'm pretty much trying to play devil's advocate here, but the argument people would use in that situation is these demons are these mythological demons.
Okay,
really losing my train of thought here.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I'll make your point for you. You know Ted Bundy? What would you call him? The monster. He's a monster, right?
I don't really know him.
Okay, he killed 25 really beautiful young women, and he was a very attractive man, and he smiled at them, and he had a broken arm, and he said, "Oh, can I have some help or whatever?" And then boom, he got you. When we were over the entire of the United States, you know.
That to me is monstrous because.
All right, so imagine from this point to here, this conversation is being recorded, and in 1,000 years, they hear this conversation about Ted Bundy, the monster, and they do carvings or whatever about this Bundy monster, etc. Same thing that I'm talking about here is all these things in ancient lore and whatever that we're starting to dismiss were at one point real deal kind of stuff that people had a great awareness of, but. They weren't doing it in a literal format in a lot of ways. We're talking about characteristics, mythology here, okay?
Uh-huh.
Where you can inflate the word monster to become not just a characteristic of a human being who's a monster, but an actual creature. And I think that's possibly where the differentiation comes on that. But the
when you start talking about these mythological creatures that have the characteristics of a psychopath, you get into discussions of people such as David Icke.
Yeah, the reptilian thing. And
it's a fascinating theory. I like reading what he has to say.
I mean, see, I'm still on the fence about whether or not it's literal or whether or not it's figurative. I don't know. What I do know is that when we talk about the reptilian brain, incidentally, the only part of the brain that is active in a psychopath. Everything else seems sort of dead. All the emotional parts, creativity part, a lot of the frontal lobe and everything is kind of geared towards that. The lower reptilian brain is what governs our instincts, a lot of the things, you know, desire for food or women or stuff like that, or gut instincts.
Could I give my interpretation of his theory?
Mm-hmm.
I think he was on to something when he said this, but I think the part where he slips up is when he starts talking about the shapeshifter. I believe that David Icke got some form of evidence that about the reptilian part of the brain. And when you start talking about the reptilian theory, you get into the discussion about the reptilian brain. I think that these people are trapped in the conscious of the reptilian brain. And I think that's where the theory lies. I think that's where you have some scientific basis. Maybe that part of the brain overtook the rest.
No, I don't think so. So you can't confine it to that. There's a lot of other aspects to psychopathy that are, for lack of a better word, mystical. They have an uncanny ability to avoid hazards, right? Like it's really strange. Like Castro, they tried to assassinate him a number of times. The guy's a complete psychopath. Loves his cigars, poison cigars, exploded cigars, and all other methods of. But he just walked out of every single one of their traps. They couldn't understand how the hell this guy knew. He also couldn't. They also couldn't understand why it's always the good guys that get assassinated, and the evil guys just keep running the world, right? Well, there's two reasons for that. One, psychopaths can sense threats in a kind of psychic sort of way. And the other part is only a good people would want to assassinate bad people, and good people generally aren't professional assassins.
I can present a counter to that theory that good people aren't professional assassins with a modern example, actually extremely modern. On last Friday, the previous Friday we had, Jake Rockefeller, the grandson of David Rockefeller, a big banker, died in a plane crash. And he wasn't the first banker to go. He is actually there have been 24 assassinations of bankers since January of 2013.
Yeah, and 500 the year before that.
And 500 the year before that, I did not know about that, actually.
Yeah. There's a lot of patsies and a lot of people like that. Psychopaths can die. Sure they can. And usually it's because they get killed by other psychopaths who are trying to cover up their tracks and using them as useful idiots, you know. And as I say, these are just general ideas. If you want really specific things, like total specific, incorruptible, you know, this is the 100% truth from me, you're probably not going to get it because I honestly don't know. This is only the I've only talked to the top researchers in the field on a personal basis for hours at length, and that's all I know. Some people think that sounds like a lot. I think it does, but it doesn't mean I know everything.
No, there's no way to know everything about a topic.
Yeah.
You can only know if you talk to every professional in the field. I'm losing my train of thought again. Can you sort of repeat my thought to me, and maybe I'll get it back?
Sorry, I was just losing mine there as well. It's it's 9:14 a.m. and I got up at like 5:15 this morning to try and check the times on the zone on this and the world clock and everything to figure this out. So you know you'll have to forgive me at the same time.
You're fine.
We were talking about psychopathy and their ability to keep themselves out of trouble. They also have some kind of a hive mind. That's something interesting as well that we've noticed is that they seem to be able to recognize each other, but they don't like each other. Yeah, like they don't have friends. What they do is they have what they call an entourage. So you'll have. I don't know if you've ever seen people like this, but you can spot psychopaths in their behaviors pretty early on, so long as you know what to look for. Somebody who always needs somebody under them, okay, like underlings, little, like, I used to be bullied at school, right? And there was usually one central bully who was the psychopath, and then these other two little tools that he had around with him who, like, did everything he said and sucked up to him and things like that. I don't know if you've ever seen this. But that's kind of how they work in the real world. How many people do you normally see with the average presidential candidate walking around all the time? Heaps, man. He's got like a whole motorcade. He's got all these advisors. He's got staff. He's got bodyguards. He's always up in front of the crowds, getting all this attention and that sort of thing. Mate, ideal position for a psychopath, you know. And they'd love it. They need it. It's like this feeding thing. If I may, let's take the demon thing into context here. Let's say it feeds on fear. Like literally, the human mind, when you're feeling afraid, emits certain frequencies. And so some people are saying that there's this extra-dimensional thing. I'm not sure how I feel about it, but this is just what some people have said. That there's this extra-dimensional wavelength out there that you can actually pick up energy. You can feed off it. You can feed organisms on it, like psychopathic creature demon possessions or whatever. Kind of like a mind parasite, if you will, that attaches to the brain stem, controls a lot of your actions and thoughts to inflict fear, pain, and suffering on the non-psychopathic entities around you so that it can feed off of your fear. It can feed off of your pain. It can feed off of your suffering. Yeah? Mm. Suddenly a whole lot of behavior methodologies seem to make a whole lot more sense. Like as I was talking about psychiatry before, about them basically just torturing people and saying that this is their way to get them well. It's exactly what a psychopath would do. They tell you the exact opposite of whatever their intentions are. Okay, so you sort of like take it and invert it. So if they say they're here to help you, they're here to hurt you. If they say they're here to sort out your problems, they're there to make more of them. If they're here to protect your property, they're there to take it from you. That kind of thing. If they say you want to invite me in because I'm going to be a good house guest, don't invite them in. They're not a good house guest. You know, that sort of thing. They do the opposite of everything.
If somebody has to justify,
they'll make stuff up. You,
then chances are you're gonna regret helping them.
Yeah, and here's the thing: don't be a sucker. All right, and it works both ways. Don't suck off of other people. If you're not a beneficial parasite like me, I do suck off the community and ask for donations and things like that. I admit that. I'm not ashamed of it, though, because I feel that I do something to earn my way in this world and that people have a choice about whether or not they give something to me. And I give something back to them, much like a beneficial parasite on a shark or something would do. So I try to look at myself in the worst ways possible and then try to justify them from looking at it from a bad angle rather than looking at myself in a great positive light and then just saying, oh, aren't I great, and not even questioning myself, you know. That's a problem a lot of people don't work out, which is a stupid thing. It's just quite simple, you know. Think of yourself in the worst possible way and then try and figure out how to live with yourself. And you go, oh, I'm not actually that much of a douchebag. There you go, son. You're sweet ass. Now, I was talking about with in terms of psychopaths and what have you in the spiritual aspects, la, 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 la. Yeah, just sounds a whole bunch like repeating the whole old school thoughts of angels and demons to me, you know? And
or the Greek philosophy of Zeus and Hades.
Yeah, and you see the same paradigm. It's just the exact same story over and over and over again. So somebody asked me the other night, you know, what kind of revolution do I want? And I said, I don't want a revolution, because the word revolution means to go in a frickin' circle. I want to break the cycle, you know. I want something new. I want something that hasn't existed before. Imagine a world, a technologically advanced, deeply spiritual, caring, loving world, where psychopaths are kept from positions of power, are kept from the limelight, so that their fear and the pain and the suffering and the deception that they feed off will no longer be a food source, and they'll all die off. So one person said to me, he says, you put a psychopath on a desert island alone with nobody to subjugate, he'll die. The parasite literally dies. It can't support itself without causing pain, fear, and suffering. And I was like, whoa, it's kind of freaky, don't you think? Sorry about getting all deep on here, but, you know, this is...
This is the kind of show I wanted.
Yeah. Because I don't know about you, but I've got pride and I've got hatred. These are two things that I don't see a particularly positive aspects of myself, but I still got them. So
I don't have a lot of pride. I try to keep it out because it just clouds my judgment in the end.
Yeah. Well, see, I'm only proud of things that I can actually point to. You know, so if somebody says, oh, Vinny, you haven't done anything from the fluoride movement. Actually, I have. Here's this presentation over here by Dr. Paul Connett, who told me it was the best presentation anybody's ever edited for him, even better than the Alex Jones interview that he did that has 48,000 hits on my YouTube channel from New Zealand. Okay? So yeah, I've got something to point to. I've got some evidence of the good that I do. And I'm proud of these things that I do. And I don't see that as a bad thing. What I do see as a bad thing about being proud about stuff is not being prepared to take criticism. I'll take criticism, but as long as it's criticism, not abuse. And I've learned to differentiate because, you know, I was a fat kid. You cannot go through high school, anywhere in the world, as a fat kid and not go home with a head full of abuse and knowing what abuse sounds like, knowing what it feels like. And so when you get that kind of stuff off of people on Facebook comments, YouTube comments, or anything like that, there's a little SpongeBob picture with a rainbow between his hands just going, "Block! And the scum is gone!" Yeah. Just get out of my way. Because, look, at the end of the day, I've become sort of like this minor celebrity. I know how egotistical that sounds, but please let me explain. I went to a gas station, and I had somebody recognize me and come up and talk to me while I was pumping gas. Okay? That's kind of a bit of a minor celebrity sort of phenomenon, don't you think? Especially if the very next day I went to a cafe and the exact same thing happened again. Somebody was just ordering their coffee and then they came up and had a conversation with me because they recognized me. Okay? And something occurred to me. Very shocking. There's like 3 million hits on my YouTube channel. X amount of millions of people have heard of me. So many people listen to me. However, the awareness of each other doesn't go both ways, does it? The amount of people who know my name does not equate with the amount of people who listen to me for whom I can know their name. Okay? So is there a Trisha out there? Is there a Sadie? Is there a Sarah? Is there a Bob? Is there a Parker? Is there, you know? There's so many other names. They only need to remember one. If they want to remember my name, it's Vinny Eastwood, which is, you know, pretty easy. Eastwood, like Clint Eastwood. Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question.
When I told somebody I was doing a show with you, they asked if you were related to Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. Well, according to my mother, I am, like, I don't know, some kind of, like, cousins fifth removal. So, I don't know. My mate, James Wright, is going to help me out with the genealogy thing online that he did, and it turns out he's related to every single frickin' elite member of a Bilderberg group that you've ever conceived of in your life. It's very scary. It scared the hell out of him, scared the hell out of me. So I just kind of like, ooh.
Or there's the possibility that he's insane.
Well, it's pretty hard to say that he's insane when he puts all his birth details and everything into a database search and you come back with, like, your fifth cousins to Charlemagne or your fourth cousins to George W. Bush, third cousins to Barack Obama, and sixth cousins to JFK, and you're also related to John D. Rockefeller, and you're also related, you know, like, this is just off the genealogy.com database search.
I'm all scared for him, honestly.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be cousins with George Bush.
oh, yeah, well, here's the thing, bro. Everybody's related to a whole bunch of people more than they think.
I would hate to be cousins with George Bush.
Yeah, well, imagine this. Imagine for every bloodline, there's good and bad DNA. All right. What if George Bush had a brother that wasn't Jeb Bush? What if George Bush had a brother that was more like Ron Paul or something like that? All right. That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but...
The problem is they were both raised by George H.W. Bush, and so they'd both be cocaine, drug-dealing weapons manufacturers.
bankers, elitists, narcissists, yeah. Psychopaths, the list goes on.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, I'm doing a show... this weekend about the Bush family.
Mm. Well, there you go. There's a great feminist t-shirt out there that says the only Bush I trust is my own. I thought that was clever, you know.
That's pretty clever, honestly.
Yeah. And, maybe I lost my train of thought here. You know, it's amazing when you think about Bush as a grown man when you just lose your train of thought. Like he does, you know. Maybe I'm misunderestimating myself.
Oh, just look at any speech Barack Obama's done. He always loses his train of thought. He has to go look at his teleprompter again.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I noticed that, and we did a picture called a toy called the Baracko Bobble. You know, the little bobble heads that you have in your car, and, you know, they bobble the head up and down as you drive?
Yeah.
Yeah? Well, it's like a Baracko Bobble. Instead of bobbing his head up and down, it goes from side to side to the little teleprompters.
I like that. That's clever.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking to a toy manufacturer in Kenya to get it sorted out, but I'm not sure if they'll be allowed into the United States. You know, he might run for president instead of making the toys from Kenya or something. I don't know. Anyway, moving right along, the future. Anybody else out there really think much about the future? I do. I think about the future all the time.
I think about the future every second.
Mm-hmm. And incidentally, have you ever noticed that you never get there? You know? That's the one thing I've figured out is that the only thing that you can't actually make happen any faster, no matter how hard you think about it, no matter how hard you try, is the future. It's the only thing you've got to wait for. But it never waits for you. So I kind of thought, you know, bugger, I'm going to stop waiting for it, and I'm just going to get stuff done every day, and that's sort of how I work in there. The reality understanding, in terms of consciousness or how you work in the world, etc., works very much in line with how the past and the present and the future all work together. So you've got psychological well-being, physical well-being, spiritual well-being, just like you've got the past, present, and the future. And they all kind of have to be in harmony to a degree in order for them to function properly, right? There has to be a clear past, there has to be a clear present, and there has to be a clear future. How do you clearly define them? Future is something that hasn't happened yet. Present is something that is happening right now. And past is something that you cannot change. You can look at the past and you can get lessons from it, and you can use it as a predictive program for future events. But you can also change those future events in the present, right? So this is how it works, is that you can take control. You really can physically take control of the present moment and change them via sheer act and will. And that power, that really, really massive power that we all have to do something right here, right now, you could, if you're listening to this, you could just suddenly turn it off and, I don't know, smash your computer with a sledgehammer or something. Doesn't necessarily matter, preferably not something destructive, but it's just an example of how you can be thinking you're about to do, you're just doing one thing, one normal thing, and then just totally change direction and make a huge, massive difference, a huge, massive impact, okay? And smash all of the things that you thought were going to happen to bits, all right? That's what the future is to me, something that has not happened yet and may never happen. kind of like they talk about in that Will Smith movie After Earth. Fear is a choice, all right? Danger's real, but fear is a choice, because fear is something that comes at you, and you can deal it. You can deal with it. You can choose how to react to it, because whatever you're afraid of does not at present hurt you, and may not ever hurt you. That's why it's a choice, because it's not actually happening. It's not real. The dark cultists and people who've been studying, you know, stuff from ancient Egypt all the way up till now, since the time of King Solomon, know that this power exists, and they've set about creating a system to prevent you from realizing you have that power too. That's how they maintain control of you. It's the easiest way to control anybody, is convince them that they have no power to change their situation. Oh, it is what it is. Oh, there's nothing I can do about it. Oh, well, I'll just accept my fate. Frank that.
Fight back.
Yeah. And that's, again,
the worst. The choice. Worst thing that's going to happen to you is you're going to die and be more free anyway.
I don't know. I don't see death as freedom. Otherwise, if you really see death as freedom and you're actually campaigning during your life for freedom, then why haven't you killed yourself yet, if that's your conclusion? You see? Mm-hmm. It doesn't equate, does it? It's kind of like the New Agers who believe that there's no such thing as good or evil, right? And I say to them, okay, why do you make health products and try to benefit people's lives if you don't believe in either good or evil? Why are you doing good if you don't believe it exists? All right? See, a lot of people don't practice what they preach is because they don't try themselves on it. They don't question themselves. There's a interesting analogy called the Ballad of the Cosmic Schmuck. I'm not sure if you've heard this. You know what cosmic schmuck means?
I do not, but just to clarify, what I mean by death is free is this life isn't very... our life is control.
Well, I don't know about you, but I don't think our lives are entirely in control, because we can change things. There's parameters to the box, sure, but we can change things. Huge things. In uncontrollable and unpredictable ways, and send out ripple effects that will literally change everything without us even knowing it or having to lift a finger. So, the Ballad of the Cosmic Schmuck. Cosmic meaning big, schmuck meaning idiot. All right, pretty understandable, okay? How do you know if you're the cosmic schmuck? If you never wonder to yourself, if you never stop and sit down and you go, you know what, am I the cosmic schmuck? If you've never done that, then you probably are one. And if you're constantly questioning, am I just being the cosmic schmuck? If you're constantly questioning that, it's impossible to turn into the cosmic schmuck. And another analogy that I can actually use to relate this is that sometimes the methods that you take, or the actions that you take to prevent a possible future, are often the actions that are required for that possible future to come to fruition. In ancient Rome, there was once rumor of a book so powerful that it was said that any words that were read off of its pages would come true as future. So it is written, so it shall be done. And the emperor spent much money, much time, and much effort, blood was shed in pursuit of this book. They eventually found it at great cost to the empire, and they brought it back to see what it said. The book told them that there would be a grain shortage and that Rome would starve and that many would die. The emperor took measures to prevent this terrible possible future by confiscating all the grain from around Rome, putting it in one giant granary, and putting it under guard 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But the granary wasn't constructed properly, and moisture leaked through the roof. Down onto the grain it went, and it made all of it mouldy, and all the grain was worthless, and Rome starved. So the very act that they took to prevent their terrible future was exactly what they needed to do in order to make their future terrible. And I found it's quite an interesting story because it makes me think a lot about things that I don't want get thrust upon me whether or not I want them. You ever notice that? You know, like, have you ever gotten socks for Christmas?
Nope.
See? You don't know what I'm talking about. Some people do. And what that occurs to me is like, I don't know the consequences of my actions. Like, I really don't. Do I? I can't see it happening. I can try and change things. I can sort of assume where stuff is going, but I don't really know. I'm not totally in control, but that doesn't mean that somebody else is totally in control of me. And it's the little choices that we make every single day that make a difference. It's kind of like what Gandalf was talking about on the Hobbit movie. He says it's the actions of ordinary folk, simple acts of kindness and love that keep the darkness at bay. It's not always great power that rises to challenge great evil.
I can agree with that.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things to be said for the benefits of religion and spirituality, you know. God bless them. But personally, I'm incapable of following, you know. And it's not like I'm giving the finger to God and all of that kind of stuff. Quite the contrary. I actually want to honor my God by doing what he would do in my position. If I have skills, I have talents, and I can help God's children, etc., I will. And I do. And I've had...
You're following his word.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't go to church. And I ain't read the Bible. Okay? This realization came to me that you will inherently know right from wrong. You don't necessarily need a book to spell it out to you. You know in your base levels that what you're doing is right or if what you're doing is wrong. And even if you're confused about it, there'll be lots of deceivers and everything around you, you know, telling you, say, oh, you need to do this or you need to do that in order to become this that you want, etc. All these people who tell you how to achieve your dreams that haven't even achieved theirs yet. You know, I can teach you how to be rich. I can teach you how to have 1 million YouTube followers. How many YouTube followers have you got? 28.
That's how many I've got, actually. It's funny.
Well, we'll see what happens after the show as well. So I'll put the link up to your YouTube channel and try and give you a help there. Because, I reckon we could get you 100 YouTube subscribers, bro. I've got 15,000 if we upload this... this video to my channel and ask people to go to yours and subscribe. We might get over that 100 mark, and then you'll be able to do a lot more with your show and video and software. Yeah,
I'm aiming to get listeners. That's but thank you for coming on. This is my biggest show ever.
Oh well, thank you. I'm 6'4". I'm used to it. The biggest guest ever.
I've never had over 8 listeners. In this show, we've had an average of 9.
Oh, wow. That is just a record breaking there. Isn't it? Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've sort of gone past the live recording thing. Mostly I just do my stuff pre-recorded and then pop it up on the website, right? So I'm not worried. Not in the least. You know, it could be a lot worse.
All the live broadcasts go up as archives.
Well, obviously. But anyway, thanks for having me on your little show here. Glad that you're doing quite well, especially for a 15-year-old kid who can't use his arms or legs. one would say that you're a hero, right? In a lot of ways. But fortunately, you've got knowledge of how bad pride is, and you're going to go like, no, I'm not some hero. I'm not something to look up to. I'm way shorter than you in a wheelchair.
Which, that is the truth. I am much shorter than these people.
Yeah. See, I'm 6'4", and I found out that being tall is a leadership characteristic. Why? Because people are forced to look up to you. I don't really have much of a choice in the matter.
Well, that's good. I like that. All
right. Sounds like my wife has just gotten awake now, awakening to a phone call. The poor woman, she has to deal with me getting up at all sorts of hours in the morning, going shows with 9 listeners. I mean, my goodness. The stuff she has to put up with. Yeah. Hey, actually, coping with things. Final words on that. Have some humor about it. All right, really. Even if it's not funny, make some jokes about it. There's a thing called gallows humor. When the chips are down, when things are dark, when it is the worst crap you could ever conceive of in your life, make some really bad jokes about it. And laugh at it anyway. You know, kind of like Doctor Who. Whenever he's about to die or something, he's usually laughing at the thing about to kill him. And then he wins.
Well, Vince, based on what I've seen about your humor, you're very good at the bad jokes.
You know, I love irony, so being good at bad jokes is ironic in and of itself.
And we love it anyway.
Yeah. Again, if you don't laugh, you'll cry. So go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, ladies and gentlemen. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. Eastwood isn't go ahead, make my news.
And if you guys liked the content we spoke about on this show, please tune in again, because I plan to have much more content like this coming up in the next few weeks, and hopefully for a long time.
Kind of like the Occupy movement. They produced a lot of content. Oh, no. Actually, they were intense. It's in a way. Anyway, okay.
One more laugh. That was the last laugh for this one.
Yeah, well, I always hoped I'd get the last laugh.
Well, I guess you got one more, because that was pretty good and pretty bad at the same time. Good job. You're very good at those jokes. You really are.
Yeah, well, my father was a genius, designed over 400 different types of forklift tire, had a 97% market share in the Southern Hemisphere for the distribution of forklift tires, and he invented the methodology of bonding steel to rubber, and a number of other things, and my mother was a nurse and a poet, so, you know, I'm just kind of got some of the worst of both worlds here.
And I'm a kid with no humor at all.
Well, it's not true, because you cackle mildly, at least. So if you had no humor at all, there wouldn't even be a cackle. Not even a giggle or a chortle.
I have no ability to make jokes.
Okay.
None at all.
Well, surely the best way to start making jokes is making jokes about yourself, because, I don't know, the thing... Actually, I can't advise people how to make jokes. I can't advise people how to make comedy, because I only tell bad jokes. And the only reason I tell jokes is to amuse myself. I don't care how anybody else reacts to it. I'm having a good time.
Well, I do like the way you think, dude. I want to bring you back for another show in the future. Are you still on for our next Wednesday?
Yeah, sure. I can probably make that. I'll let you know if I can.
Awesome. This time again... Check the archive if you need to remember.
Yeah. It'll be for the New Zealand listening audience, it'll be the 26th, Thursday the 26th at 7:30 a.m. And for the American audience, it'll be Wednesday the 25th at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Mm-hmm. Pacific 12:30, and I don't know the other time zones, so just can...
Well, basically it goes Pacific, Mountain, Central, Eastern. And there's like 2 hours in between Eastern and Pacific. So you can just kind of go like, what's Pacific? It's 12. So that means Mountain time must be 1 and Central time must be 2. and that means Eastern Time is 3.
I see. Wow. You finally broke that mystery for me.
Yeah. Well, it comes with when you're a tool on American Freedom Radio, you have to learn those time zones. Oh, well, dude, I was getting up at like 5:30 in the morning. Oh, no. From 3 till 5 o'clock in the morning was my slot on American Freedom Radio for 6 months, bro, 5 days a week.
Oh, that would hurt me.
All right, and because I'm in New Zealand, it's even worse than just doing it at that time in the morning. It's also on your weekend, bro. It also happens on Saturday. So on Saturday morning, you have to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning to be on the radio for 2 hours till 5.
That really does hurt. I'd hate that.
Well, you know, I did it because I wanted to be a famous talk radio show host. I wanted to help people, and I wanted to talk about really deep, meaningful stuff every day and not boring bullcrap, you know? I can't be bothered with that.
Hey, I would do it, just not at 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah. Well, hey, if somebody offers you the opportunity on a big network and stuff like that, and you previously have no opportunity whatsoever, trust me, you'll take it. If
I'm in school and have no opportunity to do that.
Something tells me that being in school doesn't actually grant you a whole lot of opportunities anyway. It didn't me.
That's fair, but I really don't have many. I really don't have any other choice in the matter.
Yeah. That's true. Because it's not like you can just resist and say, no. I'm not gonna do all of this. You know, you just can't.
You know? The other thing is, I actually am learning something there.
Would you be learning geometrically more if you were watching an equal time frame of documentaries on YouTube instead of going to school?
I would probably learn more, but
you would learn geometrically more. You'd learn 10 times. You'd learn it 100 times the speed.
Yeah, but I'm learning in school currently how to speak Chinese and how to film videos.
Yeah, well, that'll be good when the U.S. economy gets sold out to Red China. You can be like an interpreter.
Yeah, have a job.
You know, it's job security. You know,
agreed.
Like Blackwater. Actually, their job is security, but
I actually don't know much about them.
Well, they're owned by Monsanto, and they're a private mercenary force.
They're owned by Monsanto. They're evil.
Yeah, tells you about all you need to know. And they were caught tripping balls on acid, driving around Baghdad, shooting random people and innocent civilians in their cars and stuff like that, driving around in Humvees. It was hilarious videos, if you're a psychopath.
Well, people often tell me that I am. So, we'll see.
Yeah.
But thank you for coming on. I'm out of time. I gotta move out of this chair or my legs are gonna start to go numb. I've been in here for almost 12 hours.
Oh, wow, man. Okay. You go for your life, man. And thank you very much for having me on the show. And a reminder for the Vinnie Eastwood Show audience, this little YouTube channel here. I need you to go in there. I'm going to post this archive on my website, by the way. But I need you to go into Dylan Wade's YouTube channel and subscribe today. It's The Truth Speaks. So if you go to youtube.com and then you run a search under channels for The Truth Speaks, and we'll have links on the homepage. He needs 100 subscribers. He's currently on 26 at the end of this show. So thanks very much, Dylan, and we'll see you again.
Thank you for your help, Vince, and I will see you next time.